Next on our agenda is item J, California Case Management System, the CCMS Cost Benefit Analysis Report from Grant Thornton, LLP. Thank you. And we'll have Ron Overholt standing in for Mr. Stephen Nash. Thank you.
Many of you know that Stephen Nash rides a scooter to work. I shudder to think what happened to him on the way over here today. I was Interstate 80 in a scooter. And when I need a charisma coach, you're my first choice, Justice Baxter. Whenever I need one. So I'd like to just introduce our guest from Grant Thornton, LLP, who has done our cost-benefit analysis on the California court case management system, and Mr. Graham Finley, who's the director from Grant Thornton, LLP. As you know from the audit, from the Bureau of State Audits, one of the recommendations that they had and one of the criticisms that they had was that a cost-benefit analysis had not been done. And, of course, as we know, this being an iterative process going back 8 years and with the evolving branch governance that we've had, doing a cost-benefit analysis early on under the recommendation from the Chief Information Officer of the state at the time was that that was not a wise approach at that time. But certainly the Chief Information Officer and her recommendations that were released in April of 2010 certainly recommended that this evaluation be done, and we immediately retained Grant Thornton to do that on her recommendation. It was her recommendation that we work with Grant Thornton, who's one of the recognized experts in this area. So they conducted this independent review, and you all have a copy of what their report shows and their recommendations. And at this time, I'd like to introduce Mr. Graham Finley, a director from Grant Thornton.
Okay. Thank you, Ron. Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. Can everybody hear me okay? Great. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
So what I would like to do this morning is provide a summary of the results of the cost-benefit analysis that Grant Thornton has conducted for the AOC. There are three things I'd like to cover this morning. The first is the purpose and scope of our cost-benefit analysis. The second is the approach we took to conduct the cost-benefit analysis. And the third and final part is the results in terms of what we found out during the process. So in terms of purpose and scope, the AOC contracted with Grant Thornton to conduct a cost-benefit analysis of the California case management system. There were three main things that the AOC wanted to understand. First is the anticipated full life cycle cost of ownership for CCMS, and that cost of ownership is not only state-level costs, also includes court costs. The scope of the analysis did not include local justice partner costs. Second is the expected quantitative and qualitative benefits that would be realized through CCMS once it was fully deployed. So when I say quantitative, I mean things that we could estimate a dollar value. And qualitative is basically those things where there may be benefits anticipated, but you can't readily put a dollar value on them. And then finally, estimate a return on investment for CCMS. And here a return on investment is basically a dollar number that compares the amount of money that would be spent in a particular scenario against not implementing the system. And as we go through the process, I'll sort of define that more precisely. We started the cost-benefit analysis in mid-October, and we just wrapped it up this week. So the cost-benefit analysis identifies a set of scenarios and estimates an ROI for each of the return on investment for each of those scenarios. We do not make any recommendations, and we are expressing no preference for any of the identified scenarios. We're simply presenting the results with the idea that it would inform judicial branch decision-making on the future course of CCMS. We're looking at costs that go back to fiscal year 2002. They're all considered part of the CCMS sort of cost history, and the timeline of the CBA extends through fiscal year 2020. The reason we used 2020 was our ending point. It's basically a 10-year useful life for the system from today, which is pretty consistent with sort of common practices when looking at the return on investment for a large IT investment. Sort of a 10-year lifespan is a common thing to use. We also present the results from two different time spans. We look at the return on investment. Imagine we had a time machine, and we can go back to 2001, and let's assume we know everything we know today, and then sitting in 2001, we say, well, what are we going to end up spending on CCMS or, you know, other alternatives, and what's the return on investment? So we present that perspective on the results, but we recognize that the money that's been spent on CCMS from 2002 through today is, you know, what economists would call a sunk cost. You can't get that money back. So from an economic decision perspective, we're also presenting the results from now through 2020, and what does that return on investment look like to the extent there's a difference in the results. And we felt that providing both of those perspectives would be useful to decision makers. So our analysis is an objective and independent assessment of four scenarios for CCMS. Scenario one is cancel the CCMS deployment. So in this scenario, the CCMS project would basically be canceled at the end of this fiscal year. The CCMS V2 and V3 systems that are already out there in the field would continue to be used. They're now operational systems, and they would, you know, have a useful life just like any other system that's in use in a court. But each of the 58 courts would independently make their own decisions on maintaining, upgrading, and replacing the case management systems at their courts. This scenario is used as the baseline against which all of the other scenarios are compared. So when you see the return on investment calculations, this scenario is basically going to be sort of the zero state, the baseline, and then we'll compare all of the other scenarios against this scenario. The second scenario is a 58-court deployment, all the courts in the state. So all the courts in this scenario would operate on a CCMS environment that's maintained at the California Court Technology Center. It would also include integration of an enterprise document management system, which would also be implemented at the California Court Technology Center. For those courts that already have a document management system at the time that CCMS is deployed at their court, that document management system would be integrated with CCMS. But if the court did not have a document management system, they would get to use the enterprise document management system that's being implemented at the CCTC. This scenario also includes deployment or an implementation of electronic interfaces with any state or local justice partners that are prepared to implement those interfaces. The third and fourth scenarios are more limited deployments of CCMS. So scenario three has been labeled Southern Region plus V2, V3. So what this means is after deployment of the three early adopter courts, the CCMS deployment would be limited to the Southern Region courts, not including Los Angeles, plus any of the remaining V2 and V3 installations, so that all V2 and V3 deployments would be retired and replaced with V4. This would mean that the single V3 instance at the Alhambra Courthouse in L.A. would also be replaced by V4. Similar to the 58-court deployment, it would include integration with an enterprise DMS at the tech center if the court did not have a document management system already, and it would include implementation of electronic interfaces with any justice partners that are prepared to create those interfaces. This scenario covers 14 courts, and it's about 44% of the case volume for the state. The other courts who are not included in this scenario would basically do their own thing, decide how they wanted to maintain, upgrade, or replace their case management systems independently. The fourth scenario is called interim CMS plus extra small courts. So in this scenario, the objective is to fully retire V2, V3, plus the Sustained Justice Edition software, which is one of the, you know, existing case management systems in use in a number of courts. So we would fully retire those three systems, plus any other extra small courts that were left after that would also be migrated onto CCMS. Again, the same idea. It would include deployment of an enterprise document management system at the tech center if you did not have a DMS locally. It would include implementation of electronic interfaces with any state and local justice partners who are prepared to implement those interfaces. This scenario has a total of 34 courts in it, and it's just under 50% of the state caseload would be covered. Again, those courts that were not included in this scenario would independently make choices about how they want to upgrade, replace, or maintain their existing case management systems through the duration of the cost-benefit analysis, which, again, we took out through 2020. So those are the four scenarios that we looked at. So for each of those scenarios, this is a little bit of an eye chart for those of you who don't have slides in front of you, but I'll sort of walk through them piece by piece. For each one of those scenarios, we analyzed a set of cost categories, the idea being to get a full sense of all of the IT and non-IT costs involved in each of those scenarios. So the major categories of costs that we assessed were, first of all, CCMS deployment costs. This includes both state-level costs, so, for example, AOC staff and AOC contractors, and court-level costs, primarily court staff costs associated with deploying CCMS. It includes operations and maintenance costs for CCMS, both state level and at the courts. It includes continuing IT costs for the existing systems. So for those systems, for those courts that are either not replacing their existing systems with CCMS, or if they're in the period where they're going to be replacing their systems with CCMS, but their deployment isn't here yet, they're going to have to continue running their existing systems, and we included the maintenance costs associated with those systems. There are current system replacement costs. In the scenarios where not all 58 courts migrate onto CCMS, then for those courts that don't migrate onto CCMS, some or all of them will have to replace their existing case management systems at some point during the next 10 years, and we made estimates of what those courts would be, those costs would be. There are continuing program costs, and what this means is the non-IT costs of running those, executing the business processes associated with case management, particularly those business processes that would be impacted by CCMS. And again, I'm going to go through each of these in more detail to sort of talk through what's included there. But this is basically the non-IT costs associated with running case management at the courts. And the final category is new revenue. There are three new sources of revenue that are intended to help offset the deployment and maintenance costs for CCMS. Again, I'll talk through what those sources of revenue are. So for each of the scenarios, we estimated the costs associated with each of these categories, and then basically we add up the costs from all of these to get a number, and that's the total number, the total amount that would be spent over the next 10 years, or actually, and adding back the costs that have also been spent since 2002 on CCMS. That gives you a total cost for each scenario, and then the return on investment analysis is basically looking at the differences between those total costs. So what I want to do now is basically walk through each of those cost categories and talk through the major cost drivers and assumptions around each of those categories. Before I do that, though, I want to make a reference back to another document that's sort of been in circulation for a few years, which was a 2007 business case conducted for AOC by Gartner. I just want to sort of, for those of you who are familiar with that document, I wanted to contrast what we've done with that document, just so sort of it's clear on the, you know, where it's similar and where it's different. The diagram here shows our cost categories, and it also shows the areas that were covered in the 2007 business case. If you like, I think the 2007 business case was more of a benefits analysis than it was a cost-benefit analysis. It primarily focused on the benefits that could be driven through CCMS. It didn't talk a lot about the costs associated with achieving those benefits. What we're trying to do is address both elements. A little bit about sort of the approach before we go into each of the sort of the individual cost categories. In completing the cost-benefit analysis, We issued an electronic survey to all of the courts to try and collect some baseline information to help us with context and some general data we wanted to collect. We got responses from 48 courts. We also conducted telephone interviews with 28 courts to talk specifically about their current IT costs, how much they're spending on their case management systems today. We made in-person visits to 7 courts. We also conducted a number of telephone interviews with various courts, and we also held group interviews with representatives from the Sustain User Group and the Small Court Consortium, and we had a number of meetings as well with AOC management and staff. The state executive branch requires that all large IT investments go through what's called a feasibility study report process. And a feasibility study report is basically a business case document, a cost-benefit analysis, that the state executive branch, the state CIO, and the Department of Finance require of any large IT investment before it's approved. What we've done in this cost-benefit analysis is follow that FSR format. So the format of the actual document is pretty similar to a feasibility study report format. And the actual the matrices, the Excel spreadsheets that we present with all of the results in them, they are in the state what's called the Economic Analysis Workbook format, or EAW for short. That's the state mandated format for doing these kinds of analyses. So we wanted what we did to be consistent with what the executive branch usually does in these kinds of processes. And to the extent that there's some sort of strange language that we're using, that's sort of EAW speak. And so I'll try and translate into English, where it's somewhat confusing, but that's the reason why we're using some of the terminology that we are. So let's go on to the various cost categories. So I'll start with state-level CCMS deployment costs. So the assumptions around here, and the numbers on the first two bullets here relate to the 58 court deployment. AOC intends to take what's called sort of a mixed approach to deploying CCMS. That means that an external vendor will be used to deploy CCMS to the early adopter courts and to the very large courts in the state. AOC wants to use the early adopter court implementations as a way to transfer knowledge to AOC staff and then have AOC staff actually execute the deployment at a lot of the smaller courts. So in the end, an external vendor would do the deployment at about 13 of the 58, and AOC internal staff will deploy to the other 45 courts. As I said before, all courts will operate on a standard platform operated at the tech center. There'll be an enterprise document management system that is also going to be implemented at the tech center. And if a court doesn't already have a document management system at the time that CCMS is deployed at that court, they'll be integrated with that enterprise document management system. And for those justice partners that are able and willing to implement an electronic interface with CCMS, that will be included as part of the deployment for each court. So those are the major assumptions that drove into the estimate of state-level costs. When you look at court-level costs, there are three main categories of costs that the courts will have to cover as part of the CCMS deployment. The major category is the court staff costs associated with deploying CCMS. So to estimate that, we actually had conversations with some of the early adopter courts who are now going through the process of estimating what they think it will take for them to support the deployment. And what we did was basically take their estimates and extrapolate them across the 58 courts to come up with an estimate of court staff costs. Also, if the court doesn't already have a document management system, they're going to have to deploy additional staff to support the deployment of a DMS at that court or integration with the, the enterprise DMS at the tech center. And if they do decide to implement a local document management system before CCMS is deployed, there'll be hardware and software costs associated with that, which we also included in our analysis. A lot of our estimates around the DMS costs leverage work that Santa Clara has done. They've actually done a cost-benefit analysis for their court on implemented document management system, and they did a pretty detailed analysis, and we used a lot of the information that they've developed to help develop our estimates as well. So when you look at those components of the costs across the four scenarios, so let me sort of walk through sort of these results. There are three categories here: state cost, core cost, and then a total. For the cancel CCMS deployment scenario, that has a state cost of $270 million. That's the money that's already been spent on CCMS V4. That money's not coming back, so it's a sunk cost. It has to be considered as part of the, you know, ultimate return on investment if you cancel the project. Clearly, if you cancel the deployment, there are no core costs going forward from today through 2020. And so the total CCMS deployment costs for the canceled CCMS deployment scenario is around $270 million. For the 58 core deployment, the state cost is estimated to be about $1.1 billion to deploy across all 58 courts. We estimate the court cost to be about $230 million. So that's a total of just under $1.4 million that it will cost to deploy CCMS across the 58 courts. For the southern region and interim CMS scenarios, they're partial deployments, so both the state costs and the core costs are somewhat less. The southern region deployment, we estimated about $750 million, and for the interim CMS plus extra small courts, around $824 million. When you talk about operations and maintenance costs, so this, once each court is deployed onto CCMS, there are costs associated with operating and maintaining that. And again, all of the CCMS instances are assumed to be at the California Court Technology Center. One key item here is there is no chargeback model assumed here. So all of the, I should say almost all, of the operations and maintenance costs associated with CCMS are state-level costs. Court costs are limited to what I would call out-of-pocket expenses associated with operating the system. So, for example, if you hire new staff, you need to train those staff. You're going to interact with the governance processes at the tech center where bug patches or enhancements are being deployed. There may be local testing that's necessary. So those kind of costs will still have to be covered at the court level, but the bulk of the operations and maintenance costs are assumed to be state-level costs. Similarly, the document management system operations and maintenance and cost for those people who are using the enterprise DMS, that's also a state-level cost. For those courts that have a local document management system, that is a court-level cost. They will have to pay those operations and maintenance costs. So looking at the totals there, of course, in the canceled CCMS deployment, there is no one deployed on CCMS V4, so the cost is zero. In the 58-court deployment, we estimated about $800 million between 2011 to 2020 would be the operations and maintenance costs for CCMS for 58 courts, and then about $75 million in out-of-pocket expenses for the courts. So that's a total of $876 million. For the southern region and the interim CMS, again, those are partial deployments. There aren't as many courts on CCMS, so the costs are somewhat lower. For southern region, we estimated around $466 million. And for the interim CMS, the estimate was about $491 million. Again, that's from the first deployment of CCMS, which is really sort of end of FY12 through FY2020. Continuing existing IT costs, so again, these are the current system costs for each of the courts who either are not implementing CCMS or have not yet implemented CCMS because they're waiting for the deployment. They still have to pay for the maintenance and operation of their current case management system. This data was mostly based on the 28 interviews we did with courts to collect actual current system cost information, as well as the courts' costs for maintaining their existing systems. It also includes the supplemental funding that AOC provides to support V2, V3, and the sustain systems, which varies sort of year by year, but it's not an insignificant amount of money. So it can be more than $20 million a year. As you might expect, for the scenarios where, pick the 58-court scenario, as courts are deployed onto CCMS, this number goes down. You know, today, all 58 courts are maintaining their existing IT systems. As they migrate onto CCMS, more and more of them no longer have to pay for that maintenance. So at the end of the 58 court deployment, this number is zero, because nobody is any longer maintaining their own systems. In the southern region and the interim scenarios, 3 and 4, because they are partial deployments, at the end of that deployment process, there are still some courts who are running their existing systems, so there will always be some local current existing IT costs for those courts. So for the results there in terms of our estimates, for cancel CCMS deployment, so this is basically an estimate of if CCMS is not deployed and the existing systems stay in the courts and people continue to basically pay what they're paying today in terms of operations and maintenance, what will that cost? And our estimate is it's about $1.2 billion between now and 2020 will be spent. In the 58 court deployment, that number is $569 million. So that what that represents is the cost that the courts will have to pay in operations and maintenance of their local systems until they go onto CCMS. You know, at that point, they're not paying operations and maintenance anymore. In the southern region, in interim scenarios, it's a mixture. There are a set of courts that will be deploying onto CCMS. So for those courts, they pay their current system maintenance costs through the point that they deploy onto CCMS, and then they're not paying those costs anymore. For the courts that will never go onto CCMS, they have to pay these costs through the full period of the CBA out through 2020. So when we add those together, the southern region is about $840 million, and for the interim CMS scenario, it's about $795 million. So current system replacement costs, what this represents is in those scenarios in the, where not all courts are going to be deployed onto CCMS, for those courts that are not, they have to basically decide what they're going to do over the next 10 years with their existing systems. And we needed to estimate what that would likely cost. What we tried to take is what I would call a minimalist replacement strategy. And what I mean by that is where we thought a court could reasonably survive on the system it's got through 2020, then we assumed it would. Where we felt that they could upgrade their existing system to a more modern version of that system without having to effectively rip it out and replace it, we assumed that they would do that. And when we felt that the court would have to replace their existing system because it simply wasn't tenable to maintain that system for another 10 years, we estimated what it would take to replace that system with the minimum functionality needed to support their current business processes. So no additional business process reengineering, no document management systems, no additional automation. Basically, what's the minimum required to get what I've got today in terms of business functionality would be on a technical platform that will see me through 2020. We felt there were probably about 11 courts that could survive on the systems they've got through 2020. All of the rest would have to do something reasonably significant between now and 2020 in order to maintain their systems. So the estimates we came up with there for the cancel CCMS deployment, so this is assuming all 58 courts have got to figure out what they're going to do independently, we estimated about $340 million is what it would cost the courts between now and 2020 to basically maintain the status quo environment but on more modern technology. For the 58 court deployment, the number is obviously zero because everybody is going onto CCMS. Nobody is doing their own upgrade or replacement. For the southern region, we estimated about $250 million because, if you remember, there's 14 courts included in the southern region scenario. So the other 44 have to figure out themselves and replace their own systems. A lot of them are fairly small courts, but there are a lot of them, and we think it comes to about $250 million. The interim CMS scenario, there are 34 courts in that scenario, so the remaining courts have to, again, decide what they're going to do independently and do their own replacements and upgrades. They are mostly the larger courts, and there we estimated about $215 million it would cost for those courts to replace their existing systems. So our estimate of $342 million, we're not the only people looking at this number. And, in fact, the California Trial Court Consortium commissioned an independent study, which reported quite recently, on basically this same question: how much would it cost for the courts to do a replacement independently of their own systems? Our estimate is a little less than theirs. Their midpoint was about $406 million, I think. They did a low-range estimate, which was $363 million, which is still a little higher than ours, but it's pretty close. So I feel we're pretty consistent with the with their assessment in terms of what those costs would likely be. So we'll move on to non-IT costs now. So this continuing program cost is EAW speak for the non-IT cost. How much does it cost you to run your business through the period that we're talking about? So what we're talking about here are the non-IT business process costs. And what we did was identified the major case management-related functions that were likely to be impacted by CCMS. So we're not looking at every single cost associated with case management within the courts, but what we were trying to identify were those specific costs, primarily at the courts, that would likely be impacted by CCMS, and then we tried to estimate what those are today and then make estimates of what they would be in each of these, you know, target scenarios where CCMS is either fully or partially deployed. So the major business processes that we considered were, first of all, case initiation. So this is the process of actually bringing a case in, getting it into the case management system. There were probably two main assumptions around that. The first is, once a court's on CCMS and they get a paper case file, so they get a piece of paper that they have to data enter into the system, we estimate it would probably take twice as long to enter that data into the system. And this is based on conversations we had with a number of courts that have gone through similar projects in the past, including V3 implementations, simply because you're entering so much more data. A lot of the existing systems really don't capture much data on a case at all. CCMS captures a lot up front. So we thought it was probably going to take at least twice as long to enter a paper case file into the system as it does on one of the, you know, the current systems out there today. The other major assumption was, if you can get that case file in electronic format, so you eliminate the paper altogether, then that data entry cost goes away altogether. And we made some specific assumptions around the percentage of case files that would likely be received electronically from state and local justice partners primarily. These assumptions were based on conversations with the courts, and I would say they're significantly more conservative than some of the assumptions that have been made in the past. Certainly, they're a lot more conservative than the assumptions used in the 2007 business case. Generally, we assume that for the larger courts, they can probably get a large proportion of their case files electronically in one format or another, but both for sort of population demographic reasons and economic reasons, we thought it was very unlikely that the small courts are going to be able to get a very large percentage at all in the near future of their case files electronically. They're probably going to be paper-based for a long time. So, you know, when we sort of put all that information together, we estimated that probably on an average about 73% of the case file volume could reasonably be assumed in a target state to come in electronically once everybody is on CCMS. That contrasts with, I think, 100% in the business case in 2007. The number would be a little higher for citations because the California Highway Patrol e-Citations project is intending to deliver that information electronically to all the courts, so that bumps up the citation percentage to, I think, about 87%. So those are the main assumptions around case initiation. For fee and penalty processing and calendaring, those are both business processes that are have a lot of manual activity around them today, especially the calendaring process. Not so much creating the calendars, but there's a process of retrieving paper case files to actually support all the cases that are on that calendar. And we felt those processes could be greatly improved in terms of level of efficiency, but that was contingent on a document management system being integrated with CCMS. So you had to have a DMS in order for CCMS to really give you these benefits around calendaring and fee and penalty processing. Similarly, with appeals case preparation, that's a very manually intensive process today. And depending on the nature of the case, it can take a few minutes to a few days to prepare an appeals case. And also background checks fairly manually intensive today in a paper-based environment. We felt both of those could be significantly improved with CCMS, but again, it's contingent upon having a document management system integrated with CCMS to really get leverage the benefits there. Administrative inquiries is another area where we felt there was significant room for improvement, and that's actually been borne out, I think, by some of the courts that have put a lot of their information online. They've seen a great decrease in the amount of sort of, you know, front office traffic of people coming in and asking for, you know, name searches and electronic records and so on. The final major area was actually with another state agency, Child Welfare Services. They have a lot of people spending time entering and key entering and reviewing court data for accuracy as part of their child welfare processes. And as part of the Child Welfare Services project, they did an independent analysis of this process. And they felt that process, just simply the data entry and the data quality review, was costing their people about $29 million a year. And they felt that most, if not all, of that cost could go away if they could get all of that information electronically and not have to do the key entry or the data quality review. Now, one thing sort of I want to talk about in terms of, you know, how do these things really come to be in a court. First of all, each of the deployment assumptions assume a certain set of waves, you know, between two to four waves, depending on the scenario. So courts will migrate wave by wave onto CCMS, and as each wave goes in, there's a certain percentage of the case volume of the state that is now on CCMS, and there's a certain percentage that is not on CCMS. The percentage that's not on CCMS, it's basically status quo, business as usual, costs remain, you know, what they are. For the percentage that is now on CCMS, we assume that these benefits kick in for those courts. However, you know, anybody who's been through a major system implementation, and certainly as we were talking with the courts, they validated this for their own case management system implementations. You don't flip the switch and then day one, all of a sudden, these things are happening. In fact, usually it's quite the reverse. Courts usually start out by digging a hole for themselves in terms of productivity. Their productivity goes down, and in fact, many cases, they build up a fairly dramatic backlog of cases because there are, you know, there's problems with the system, either technical problems or people don't know how to operate it. There's change management issues. You know, people haven't been fully trained. They don't like the new business processes. Anybody who's been through this process, you know, you see it again and again. And so you have to assume it's going to take some time for these processes really to get ingrained in the organization, for people to accept them, and, you know, for the court to really become sort of a humming machine running CCMS and getting all the benefits. Based on our experiences with other, you know, large state and other public and private sector projects, as well as what the courts told us about their prior experiences, we assumed it would take a full year before any of these benefits would start to accrue for any of the courts. So if a court deploys beginning of FY13, it won't be until the beginning of FY14 that any of these benefits start to kick in. We basically assumed it was business as usual during that year, which really means what would happen is things would get a lot worse for 6 months probably, and then they'd get better in the following 6 months. So by the end of the year, you're now getting the benefits out of the project. So from a continuing program cost, these are the biggest numbers in the cost-benefit analysis because this is where most of the cost is. It's in the work that people are doing. It's in storage costs associated with paper case files. So the basis for these estimates are our estimates of the cost of executing all the business processes I went through from FY9-10, which was the latest year that we had real information, through FY 2020-21, which is the end of the business case period. So the cancel CCMS deployment number represents the status quo business environment, you know, what we estimate it's taking to execute these business processes today, extrapolated out through 2020. The other scenarios represent basically relative efficiencies gained through the use of CCMS as those courts are deployed onto CCMS and as those, you know, revised business processes start to kick in. As I mentioned before, the council CCMS deployment scenario is our baseline. Everything is judged against that. So the way that we, you know, assess return on investment is really comparing these numbers against each other. And that's what I'm going to be doing at the end. We're going to add all of these numbers up together, see what the results is, and then the difference becomes basically return on investment. The final cost category is new revenue. So AOC intends to generate three new sources of revenue to partially offset CCMS deployment and operations costs. The first two are sort of usage fees, if you like, for use of CCMS functionality. The first is a name search fee, and we assumed a $4 fee for conducting name searches using CCMS. I want to note here that though we did not assume any revenue from courts that are already charging these fees. If you're charging this fee today, then it wasn't considered in our analysis. It's only courts that do not charge fees such as this that we counted the revenue. Similarly, an electronic document fee, which is a $7.50 fee for conducting electronic document searches. You know, in practice, that's likely to be a page dependent. You know, the larger the document, the more you'll get charged, but we used an average of $7.50 in the analysis for the estimates. And again, there are courts that already charge a fee such as this. If they do, we did not include that revenue in the analysis. It's only basically new revenue for courts that don't charge a fee such as this. And then the final one is a credit card transaction fee of $10 for traffic offender disposition penalties that would be charged. And that would go, again, all three of these would sum together to help partially offset deployment and maintenance fees. What we come to, you know, when you look at the case volume that will be coming through CCMS over the course of the deployment, obviously for the cancelled CCMS deployment, it's zero. None of these fees would be charged. For the 58-court deployment, we estimated a total of about $197 million dollars through FY 2020. Once all 58 courts are on the system, it's about $29 million a year. Something like that would come through this. In the period we're talking about for the business case, it's just under $200 million that would be brought in. For Southern Region and Interim CMS, again, these are partial deployments, so not all courts are on CCMS, so you know it's less revenue. For the Southern Region, we estimated about $91 million, and for the Interim CMS, we estimated about $120 million. So this is probably what everybody's really been waiting for. What does that all sort of amount to? What I'm going to do is show ROI results in about four different ways, because there's a lot of different ways of looking at this, and different people want to look at it in different ways. So we try to present the information in a lot of different ways so you can just see it, you know, from a number of different perspectives. So the first thing is we're presenting it from two different time periods. As I'd mentioned earlier, we're looking at, let's go back to 2001 in a time machine and look forward. So we look at the full period from 2002 through 2020. What does that look like? And then the second column there is, if we just consider today forward, what is that return on investment? So for the cancelled CCMS deployment, if you go back to 2002 and go forward, your cost there is the sunk cost on the project. You've spent $270 million on V4, you're not getting that money back, that's a cost. So it's a negative ROI of $270 million. For FY11 onwards, since the cancelled CCMS deployment is used as our baseline, by definition, it has an ROI of zero, because it's the baseline against everything else, you know, against which everything else is compared. For the 58 court deployment, if you look from 2002 through 2020, over this time period, we get a positive ROI of about $566 million. If you just look at today going forward, forgetting about what you've spent already, you get a positive ROI of about $836 million. For the Southern Region scenario, looking at total costs from 2002 through 2020, it's about $383 million positive ROI. Just looking today forward, it's a positive ROI of about $654 million. Interim CMS, looking from 2002 through 2020, it's about $420 million. And then just looking today forward, it's about $691 million. Once CCMS, if you look at the 58-court deployment one, once CCMS is deployed across all 58 courts, we estimated that you get about $300 million a year in positive ROI every year the system is up from sort of 2018, 2019, 2020, that's contributing about $300 million a year. And what that money is doing is basically taking away, you know, eating away the cost that you've accrued for the system, both in development costs and deployment costs. So by the time you get to 2020, you've got a positive ROI of about $830 million. That $300 million has about five components to it. One component is savings in IT maintenance costs. We estimated that the operations and maintenance costs for CCMS are probably about $10 million less than the total operations and maintenance costs for all of the core systems that the courts are running independently today. So it's not a big difference, but it's, you know, it's a few million dollars a year that we think there's some efficiencies. There's a few million dollars a year in storage cost efficiencies. As courts migrate onto a document management system, they're able to start retiring some of their physical storage costs, primarily the stuff that's off-site where they're paying for off-site storage today. We actually used, again, the Santa Clara court's document management system cost-benefit analysis for some of this information. They did a pretty detailed assessment of their storage costs and what they felt they could actually recoup over time, piece by, you know, year by year, and we leveraged a lot of that information. But it's a few million dollars a year. It's not a big number. The biggest number is in court staff efficiencies in terms of basically net effect is having additional staff to do casework because you're taking a lot of the effort out of the sort of paper-driven administrative processes that are taking a lot of time today. That's the major component. About $29 million a year is the child welfare services staff costs. So these are the savings to the Child Welfare Service Agency in terms of their costs. And then about another $29 million is the revenue that would be brought in from the three new revenue sources that I mentioned earlier. I mentioned earlier that, you know, even though our case management system replacement cost estimate is pretty close to another estimate that was done very recently by an independent source, there are a lot of uncertainties about that number. I mean, there's all sorts of things that could happen. It's almost impossible, really, to predict the future. You know, if all 58 courts are going to go their own way, what would really happen? So what we wanted to do was present those same ROI numbers, stripping out all of those case management system replacement costs. So let's assume nobody spends anything on replacing their existing systems. What do the costs look like? So this table presents that. No real change to the canceled CCMS deployment piece. It's still $270 million you spend on CCMS so far. Can't get that money back. You're not spending anything going forward, so that's zero. For the 58 court deployment, it's still a positive ROI, but it's somewhat less. So it's $220 million from 2002 onwards. It's $493 million if you just look at today going forward. Southern region, $295 million going from 2002 forward. From FY11 through 2020, just going, you know, from today forward, it's about $565 million. Interim CMS, $293 million, and just going forward, about $563 million. So the three deployments are, you know, still positive, but again, it's sort of an unrealistic set of numbers because it is going to cost something for the courts to replace their existing systems, but we want to present this just so you can sort of see what happens when you take that factor out of the analysis because it is one there's a lot of uncertainty around. Another thing we wanted to do is all of the numbers we've been presenting so far, when we've been talking about CCMS costs, what we've been defining them as CCMS V4 costs. We have not included the costs spent so far on the V2 and V3 deployments. We thought that was reasonable because those effectively are independent systems today. If you cancel the CCMS project, V2 and V3 are still going to be around. They are going to be operational systems out in the world. So we thought that was a reasonable decision. But, you know, we understand that people want to see it also from that perspective. So what we did was created the ROI table also to present if you add in the money you've spent on V2 and V3 going back to 2002, what happens. The net effect is all of the numbers go down by $109 million. So looking at the table there, the canceled CCMS deployment it now has a negative ROI going back to 2002 of $379 million. So that's all the money you've spent on V4, V3, and V2. Still zero going forward. 58 court deployment, that ROI goes down to $456 million from 2002 to 2020. From 11-12 out to 2020, it doesn't change because we're basically adding the cost you spent previously. The costs for V2 and V3 going forward are already in there. They've been in from the very beginning. So it's only the 2002 to 2020 numbers that change. For the southern region, the number goes down to $274 million, and the interim CMS, it goes down to $311 million. So still positive, but all of them are less by about $109 million. So in addition to all of those sort of perspectives on the information, what we've sort of presented is what I would consider like, you know, a baseline best estimate, what we think is the most likely result, but recognizing that there are a lot of uncertainties, you know, the way things can happen. We also created what we called optimistic and pessimistic scenarios, or versions of each of the scenarios, I should say. So what we did was say, well, for each of these scenarios, we thought we were being pretty conservative in our assumptions, so there actually is a room for things to go a lot better than we assumed. And so we said, well, what would happen if things actually did go better? You know, the deployment cost a little less than we were estimating. There actually were more efficiencies in terms of business processes, a higher degree of electronic JP integration. What happens to the results then? Then for the reverse, you know, what happens if you get sort of a perfect storm and everything that can go wrong does go wrong, short of canceling the project? So, you know, deployment costs for the AOC state level are higher, deployment costs for the courts are higher, it takes longer to do each wave, it takes longer to get the benefits from each wave, it takes more than a year for each court to get benefits, and when the courts do get the benefits, they're less than we're actually expecting them to be now. So what happens then? And we did it for two different reasons. One is to sort of show some of the sensitivity in the assumptions. You know, what are the things that if you change these numbers, the ROI changes significantly. But also, and I think this is maybe the most, you know, useful part of it, it helped us identify what we think are some of the most critical aspects of the CCMS deployment that will most impact the success of the project, at least from a quantitative perspective. And so I want to talk through those. First of all, looking at sort of the results of this sort of optimistic, pessimistic scenario. So for the cancel CCMS deployment, you know, our baseline view of the world is it's $0. You know, this is basically going from 2011 through 2020. That's the period we're looking at the numbers. The optimistic is, well, it could actually cost significantly less, potentially. So, you know, we basically assume what would actually happen if we were more optimistic about which courts needed to replace their systems, reduce the amount of money it would cost to replace those systems, and we were able to sort of pull about $100 million out of that process. So that's why the optimistic is $100 million better than the baseline. In the pessimistic, we basically we took a more, I guess I could say, a more pessimistic viewpoint on the CMS replacement costs, and we basically used, there was an analysis that was done by the AOC in June of last year that came up with a much higher cost for CMS replacement costs. So we basically took those numbers, put them in what we call sort of the pessimistic view, and so that's about $368 million more than our baseline estimate. For the 58 court deployment, again, our baseline was a positive ROI of about $836 million. We think that could go to well over $1 billion if you take more optimistic assumptions. On the other hand, if sort of everything goes wrong that could go wrong, you can end up losing, you know, about $800 million. That's sort of our sort of outlying nightmare scenario, pessimistic viewpoint. For the southern region and in the interim, it's sort of a similar story. We've got a positive ROI as our best estimate, what's most likely to happen. There's room for that to get somewhat more positive, but not as much room as with the 58 court deployment, mainly because you don't have the same scale. You've only got about half of the caseload of the state on the system, so the opportunities for things to get better aren't as great because you don't have the same sort of massive cases going through the system. On the other side of it, the risks are somewhat less, because, again, there's only half the courts, you know, half the caseload on the system. So if things really do go badly, you know, the risk is somewhat less in terms of the ROI going significantly negative. Now, of course, you can sort of, you know, you can sort of play around with these numbers almost any way you want. From my perspective, what's most interesting about this analysis is not these numbers per se, but what they told us about the key factors that drove the changes in the numbers. And that's what I want to talk about next. So there were about five things that came up to us as, you know, these are the things that are really going to drive the benefits or the costs from a return on investment perspective. So these are the things that really should have, you know, a lot of attention paid to them, either as, you know, the project is planning out, you know, how we're going to do this, but also if you choose to do another cost-benefit analysis in the future, these are the kind of things to really focus on, because these are the things, if you can get more accurate numbers on these, you're going to get a much tighter estimate of ROI, you know, the better the data you can get on this stuff. So the first is the deployment wave duration. Right now, each of the scenarios where CCMS is being deployed to a court assumes it takes about 2 years to go through that deployment. If that duration extends to, say, 3 years, which is what we assumed in our pessimistic, it has a big impact. Both it increases the cost to the courts and to the state of the deployment process, and it delays the assumption of those benefits by another year, which has a big impact when you're looking out at an ROI through a fixed endpoint, as we were. You know, 2020 was our endpoint. Another point is the timeline to gain benefits after deployment. You know, I'd mentioned that in our analysis, we assumed it took a full year for the courts to really get onto the full CCMS benefits. You know, that it would take that long to get up and running and be getting all of the benefits out of the system that they could. If you can make that less than a year, say 6 months, which is what we assumed in our optimistic, it makes a big difference. Alternatively, if it takes more than a year for a court, for example, if it took 2 years, which is what we assumed in the pessimistic, that makes a big difference as well. So the ability to have a well-executed, well-planned, smooth deployment where people are appropriately trained, the business processes are in place, and you start to run efficiently, you know, as close to day one as you can, that makes a big difference to return on investment. The state-level deployment costs for AOC staff, AOC contractors, and the court deployment costs, sort of obvious, but yes, if those things go up, then ROI goes down, you know, pretty simply. The last piece that has a big impact, we feel, is the percentage of electronic case file delivery. That's one of the big drivers of business process costs. If you can get cases into the system without any paper ever existing, that can save a lot of money. So the degree to which you can get the state level and local level justice partners hooked in electronically to CCMS so that the paper never has to exist in the first place, that has a big impact. And so those are some of the things that we felt were, you know, things both critical for CCMS deployment to do well, but also if you're going to do another cost-benefit analysis at some point in the future, these would be things to focus on in terms of getting more accurate data as you learn more about, you know, what the actual deployment is going to look like. So that concludes my presentation. I am happy to take any questions you might have.
Kim? And then Bert.
So thank you for this very informative presentation. I did have a question about your optimistic and pessimistic scenarios. And in reading the report last night, I noticed that in the pessimistic scenario world, you were looking at a more dire set of pessimistic circumstances than you did on the optimistic side of the equation. So I was wondering if that was you're really planning for sort of the absolute worst-case scenario on the pessimistic side, and you did not think that there were actually offsetting optimistic benefits that would get us to an even greater, greater gain scenario on the optimistic side. Just curious about your reasoning there.
Yeah. Well, as a general rule, there's always more things that can go wrong on a big project than can go right. So there's usually, you know, your costs are unbounded, effectively, in terms of how they can increase, but they can never get less than zero. So there's, you know, there's a limit there. So yes, I mean, when you look at the optimistic versus pessimistic, we're trying to sort of be somewhat pragmatic about it, you know, because I think the optimistic scenario, they're reasonably achievable, you know, and actually some of the optimistic assumptions we made. There were differences of opinion from various people we talked to about, for example, court-level costs. We got various information from different sources about what they thought it would take for the courts to staff up. we took some of the higher estimates in our analysis. You know, so what we reflect in our sort of baseline is a pretty high-end estimate of what the courts thought. There were other estimates that were somewhat less than that. We used those more optimistic estimates in the more optimistic scenario. So they're not unreasonable. They may well turn out to be accurate, but they're certainly more optimistic than the ones that, you know, we took. But certainly from a from things like timeline to deployment, you know, how long the waves would take, how quickly, you know, you could get deployment benefits, percentage of justice pond integration, there is probably more room for things to go worse than there are to go better.
But did you also account for, you know, the learning that's gained over doing deployment after deployment after deployment? For instance, if the AOC is deploying 45 of 58, as was you know, originally assumed, did you give any credit for, as we do this more and more often, we get better at it? Or was that not really one of the factors?
I would say we gave partial credit. So we did assume that there would be a reduction in the number of court staff required to support a deployment for the latter courts versus the former courts, because you should be able to take a lot of the lessons. You know, the early adopter courts are going to make a lot of the mistakes and sort of go through the pain, and hopefully the later courts can learn, you know, and not have to go through some of that same pain. So you'll get a benefit there. What we did not do was assume that, for example, for the later courts, they would be able to attain business process efficiencies quicker than the early courts. We put everybody in at a year. So it'd take a year for everybody. So it's possible that that could actually happen, and that the latter courts, you know, by the time you get to the fourth wave, it's pretty much, you know, it's turned the handle, you know, it becomes a much more efficient process. We did not assume that.
And just one more question. At the very end of your analysis, you had the EAW worksheets that,
yes,
talked about personnel year savings, which,
yes,
you didn't really address in your presentation, but I found that kind of fascinating. So in terms of looking at potential benefits from, you know, and I assume most of that was related to e-filing, that if e-filing was going on and calendar management was being done differently and so forth, you could actually gain savings in terms of just sheer man hours to grind through the processes in the courts. Is that, am I understanding correctly what that concept
true.
Is?
That's true, yeah. So, you know, as I said, that $300 million a year in the 58 court deployment scenario, that's, I would say, at least two-thirds of that is court staff time savings. And yes, yeah, so in the back of the document we present, I mean, part of the requirements in the state process, as well as showing it in dollar terms, you show it in what they call PYs, which is basically a full-time equivalent in EAW speak. So we present the numbers in that format as well. And what it does show is that the net effect of that $300 million a year equates to several thousand, you know, staff years over the course of the time period, that has the net effect of basically saying that's, you know, time that you're now spending moving paper around, mm-hmm, in a warehouse or what have you, that can be spent doing something else to potentially help clear up some of the staff backlog, you know, whatever it would be.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Judge Pines.
Yeah, this is Judge Pines. We just received this report the end of the day yesterday, and I really haven't had much time to consider all of these matters and think about it. This is obviously not the end of the process. I assume this is going to be at some point referred to or the committees we've set up. They'll have a chance to digest it in greater detail, and we'll have more opportunities to come to some resolution or conclusion later meetings, but initially there are a lot of assumptions here, and I just want to have some understanding of some basic assumptions in terms of cost. You indicated originally that our costs so far are around $270 million, but then you indicated that did not include V2 and V3. Am I correct?
That's correct.
If you added those, it would be $379. Now, does that include everything that's been spent to date by the AOC? Does it include staff time? Does it include the amount spent by courts so far in working on this process? I'm just trying to get an idea, because I've seen higher numbers than this in terms of costs. The second issue is the projected total cost, because again, if you look at the state auditor's report, the estimate was $1.9 billion based on information provided by the AOC, which includes, of course, not just the AOC's costs, but the costs of courts to implement these things. But that was embraced in your $1.3 billion number. So there's this $600 million difference there. If you could give me a little more information about this, I'd appreciate it.
I'd probably be able to partially answer the question. Some of it I might actually have to defer to Stephen. But it does include state-level costs for V2, V3, 4 in the past. It does not include court staff costs previously. Now, if we had included those, it wouldn't have made a difference to the ROI numbers, because those would have been sort of sunk costs in all of the different scenarios. So it wouldn't have really made a difference in the differences. You know, the absolute values would have changed, but the difference wouldn't have changed, because it's, you know, it's money that's been spent in the past. We did consider all future costs from basically July 1 this year going forward. On the projected deployment costs, I can't speak to what was provided to the BSA. Stephen would have to speak to that. But I do know that there has been a change in approach in terms of how AOC was planning to deploy CCMS, in terms of particularly the amount of external vendor labor and the mix of labor between external vendors and internal staff, and that does have a significant impact on the cost. But I'm probably better off passing it off to Stephen to sort of talk about details.
Judge Pines, there is a critical difference. So the information that was provided and reviewed by the Bureau of State Audits reflected the best estimates, which incorporated an assumption of a full deployment. We had a contract that was signed, or not signed, but a contract that was negotiated with Deloitte for deployment. That was assuming $600+ million to do a 58 court deployment. Subsequently, our project management office is looking at other alternative scenarios, and the scenario that they presented and rolled out as part of this effort was not contracting all of that, but a partial, and not necessarily with the same vendor, but opening up for some of the largest court deployments to have a vendor, but then having staff working with the court, and this is really following, as you know, the recommendations of the Office of the Chief Information Officer, using state and court local staff to do the deployments for medium and small size courts. And there is a belief that, and that's what Grant Thornton looked at, but there is a belief that that is going to result in substantial deployment savings, so that the deployment scenario that was presented is not a full contract model, does not assume $600 million of deployment costs.
So is your projection consistent with the consultant's projection in terms of all costs, including court costs, to deploy and implement this system?
So that's part of why we engaged the – if I could, Chief, I'd like to step back a little bit. I have a few bigger comments, and maybe I'll be able to answer your question, Judge Pines, if I could just take a moment. Because I wanted to talk a little bit about why we engaged Grant Thornton, why we did it now, and what does it mean, and what is the process, and what is this product. The thing that obviously lit the match that got us going back in October was Bureau of State Audits coming in and looking at it, indicating this is one of the areas that they were focused on. This followed the chief information, talking about a cost-benefit analysis, a complete cost-benefit analysis of the project. This followed the chief information officer of the state report. They really were looking to have a formal cost-benefit analysis done. In both cases, both of them were looking for what executive branch level, state level type cost-benefit analysis, a formal cost-benefit analysis done equivalent to the state level. This is also very consonant with what are some of the principles of our project review board. So the project review board, as you know, tracks and manages the project costs so that we can report those to the council, not just CCMS, but all of our major project endeavors. And it does require, when you're initiating a project, to do an analysis of costs and benefits. And so all of these came together, we did believe it was necessary to do it. And again, it was a recommendation that was coming out of the BSA that we concurred with and believed that it was necessary to do. Once that determination was made, Bill asked my office and the finance division just to separate it out of the project to really engage and follow up and find out what's the best approach for doing a cost-benefit analysis. My team, we visited sat down with the chief information officer and spent some time talking, and also with the Department of Finance that used to be more involved with doing cost-benefit analysis of projects. They still review them, but not to the level that they once did. The results of those discussions were a format for how do you do it. And what we asked for, my direction was to do a top-shelf analysis. This is not advocacy, and I want that to be very clear. And any of you, as you read it, and it was just delivered yesterday, but as you read it, I think you'll see this was not an advocacy piece. This was clearly analysis that was done just looking at the project and given the data that's available. But the chief information officer, based on their recommendation, that really helped form our statement of work, which they reviewed. We also asked them for some of the most regarded firms in the state for doing it, and really at the top of their list without hesitation was Grant Thornton. And they even suggested Graham Finley. They said he's done some incredible work not only in California but in other states. That's kind of the process. The other thing is the principle that we applied in my office and also under direction from Bill Vickery was the report needed to be credible. It needed to be technically proficient and really dispassionate. I think that was accomplished by the analysis that you've heard today. One of the other principles was it really needed to be arm's length. So not only was project management for this contract management put in my office, but my intent was that Grant Thornton would be doing this basically independently. And this was kind of a marriage made in heaven, because on our first discussion with Mr. Finley, he made clear the need to talk to courts, to get court surveys, court analysis, independent of AOC. And that's not to say AOC is poison or that we have any agenda, but we're asking him to come in and provide professional judgment, this firm, given the data that we are and what we have. So that's how the costs rolled out. So a lot of these cost estimates, and you were asking how they compare with us, some cases they have much better information than I have on what the court independently what I have on what court costs were. We're reviewing this information. We think it's absolutely helpful. We've learned a lot from the work that Grant Thornton did on this, and some of the surveys and the information they collected and the conversations they had and some of the work that they did. The last thing I want to say, and I think we've said it before, but we completely concur with the BSA recommendation, not only to do a thorough cost-benefit analysis of the project now, but to do it at the completion of the three-court early adopter model, to do it again. And there's going to provide substantial information and any other critical points in time. And this isn't we agree with that recommendation. We think it's very sound. We believe that that's necessary even without that recommendation. This is an appropriate way to proceed as we move forward. So that's the recommendation that we're making to you.
Thank you, Pedro. Your response to my basic question, I'm just trying to get an idea of what's been spent and what the projected cost is. Is it $1.9 billion or is it $1.3 billion, $1.4 billion?
I concur with the estimate, the lower estimate. I believe that We do need to take this seriously. Mark Moore and his team will be making recommendations to the committees and ultimately up to the council on how we proceed. I'm telling you, as the guy that just runs the numbers and does the calculations, that from my perspective, the notion of a substantially more cost-effective deployment model and a model that takes into account some of the issues on justice, partner integration, and other things that are recommended here make complete sense to me. But again, I defer to the committees and the recommendations of the project.
And I realize, I don't mean to belabor this, just so I understand from the Grant Thornton perspective, would your estimated cost be $1.4 billion if you were to include the amount that's been spent up to date on these other systems?
If you include the amount that's been spent on V2 and V3, then the total would be $1.5 billion.
And that includes the cost of the courts to implement
from
this.
From July 1st onwards, but not historically.
I'm sorry, from this July 1st?
From this July 1st onwards, but not historically going back from today.
So it doesn't include what's been spent so far?
By the courts, that's correct.
So the courts?
By the courts.
But it does include what's been spent by
the state.
This is as of last year's report. And the other thing that I want to mention, so in their analysis, as you can imagine, they reviewed tremendous amounts of not only downloads of everything that we had in AOC in terms of cost data and information and so forth. But they also had lots of information about court historical costs. Some of it was included in surveys. It was beyond the scope that they had to verify that. Another recommendation of the Bureau of State Audits that we are implementing is to go back. So right now I can't tell you what courts have spent historically. That hasn't been reported that way in our statewide financial system. We have implemented a process so that anything case management related going forward will be reported. We have also, one of the recommendations that we've agreed with and are going to do is go back and work with the courts to identify historical. So we weren't able to provide that information to them on what the courts have historically spent on the implementation of V2, V3, and whatever they've done so far with V4.
Justice Huffman.
Thank you, Chief. I just wanted to get clear in my mind as I listened to this. This cost-benefit analysis is financial cost benefits. And I guess I was wondering, in the analysis of benefits, would one take into account things like better access to data by the public, police agencies, more accurate financial and statistical records, that judges have quicker access to information and decision making? I mean, is that something that gets taken in to account, or is this simply dollars and cents?
So the document does discuss qualitative benefits as well as quantitative. So if you get a chance to read the document, we do talk to those things like venue transparency and so on. Better efficiency of administration of justice. Public access to data, all of those things, which it's difficult to actually put a dollar figure on. There are also some things that we think that you will be able to put a dollar figure on, but just not yet. In particular, the Department of Justice and the Department of Corrections anticipate some hard dollar savings from CCMS, but they're not in a position to estimate what they are quite yet. So we've included them as sort of qualitative benefits as well, but they probably will move or could move into the quantitative bracket at some point. We're not in a position to sort of judge those benefits, make a sort of a value judgment about how much they're worth. All we do in the document is present the fact that these are likely to exist.
Thank you.
Can I also answer that, Justice Huffman?
We just had one answer.
You got the answer you like.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So going back to my discussion, and this was going back to my old hat and trying to recycle, because I actually used to be on the receiving end of Department of Finance of FSRs and all of that. And so when I was, and this more than a decade ago, when I was talking to the manager of Department of Finance about, again, the kind of the principles and wanting to make sure we had this done right and established correctly, they pointed out something very important, and that is this is a cost-benefit analysis. This is just a cost-benefit analysis, so that all it does is tell you for economic discrete items that you can put a number to. We know how much we can spend, and yeah, there is an issue, and we're going to work to make sure we've identified all of those dollars and put them in the right buckets. But how much you spend is one thing, but what are the benefits? And clearly the benefits of this project in terms of public safety and service to the public and access to files on a timely basis and other things goes beyond staff savings time or things that you can put dollars on. That's the real benefit. And the manager of the Department of Finance made it clear. In the executive branch, these are required for every project to do this type of analysis. It's not the case that just because you end up with a negative return on investment that you would cancel a project, because sometimes those other non-economic, non-discrete items are worth the cost that you're identifying in your return, your cost-benefit analysis. So it's an important gauge of dollars. But again, there's other benefits that are outside of it. And the other thing is that I think is that sets this all up kind of interestingly and appropriately, this is a cost-benefit analysis. One of the major assumptions is that the product will work, and I know that's part of the topic of today and further, and that it will roll out effectively to the courts, and they have a range, the pessimistic and optimistic range, but that there is an assumption that this will work. Well, the other item, that independent analysis that we're going to have, I think is going to tell another side of this story, and that's some of the technical feasibility and do we have a product that's ready and ready for prime time. And so, again, this is just a perspective and an important component and analysis of where we are today as we look forward.
Thank you.
Jeremy.
Yeah, just a question to follow up on something that Judge Pines asked, and it's I think an area that'd be helpful just to clarify for us, and that is there has been the number $1.3 billion that was put out, and also the number that the BSA came back with at $1.9 million. All of those on billion, all of those are our numbers, and maybe you could explain to us what components the BSA decided to put in to move from 1.3 to 1.9, and why we have been looking at the 1.3 number.
Yeah. So, thank you, Judge Herman. The issue is, and in our report to the legislature, what we identified in last year's report and this year's report, we're required to report costs related to CCMS to the legislature. We have separated out, and we are amending this year because we are interested in displaying it however anybody wants. But last year we had separately identified in that report the costs of the V2, V3, the implementation of those costs and the ongoing, because those are the interim system costs that will be replaced. We had it reported beginning last year. We had it reported and what those costs look like. The ongoing operations and maintenance were separately identified. So once you have a project rolled out, whether it's V2, V3, or when the CCMS V4 system is rolled out, there's ongoing costs annually to maintain and to keep that going. That was separately identified. And then when you include the development and deployment costs of V4, so we had separately identified that. And in total, that was $1.87, I think it was, billion dollars, almost $1.9. So that was all. We're not disputing that so it's, again, a question of CCMS-related costs, which would include V2, V3, and that's why we had asked. So he presented the alternative. So from a business case perspective today as we look forward, it's really a V4 decision. Are we deploying it or not? Are there alternatives to how we deploy it and so forth? But we also asked, include the V2, V3. When you say what's the historical cost, include that as well and take a look at what that looks like so that's why both pictures were presented. But that's the difference. So the development, deployment, V4 cost historical going forward, we were identifying at about just over $1.3 billion, rounding up from the numbers that he's showing now. And that's to some extent, it's a coincidence how some of these numbers rolled out. But the including the core costs, he's saying it's almost 1.4 on their estimate right now for, again, the V4 component of it. But when you include all of those other components, you get the higher number. And the other thing I wanted to caution, because, again, as everyone looks at this, again, I say this isn't advocacy. This is just a series of best information we have in data. When you roll out, as the state does, multi-year presentations on the EAW, and so the presentation, the 10-year presentation goes to 2020, 2021. When you do that 10-year presentation, there's ongoing costs that every year show up incremental. And so however many years you go out, guess what? That number is going to continue to get higher. And it is the world where I'm in. I'm not complaining about it. But every time, depending on what year you pick, you're going to get a different number. And that's just how these numbers work.
Right. I get that. But just so I make sure I understand it, that the $600 million, that is the difference between the 1.3 and the 1.9. We gave them both of those figures, and the $600 million is largely composed of previously expended maintenance costs for V2, V3 that have already been deployed, yeah, so as well as ongoing projections of what maintenance would be V2, V3, V4. Is that?
So I know I've confused you, and I apologize for that. There's so many layers of this. So that $600 million, just to be clear, that I said that was the negotiated historical contract that negotiated but never signed, that information that we were going to do an alternative deployment.
He's just talking about the difference between the 1.3.
Yeah, but that's what I'm trying to say. That's not it. So that has not been discussed with BSA at this point because it wasn't ready at the time when we provided the information to them for their review. We will be presenting it as part of this cost-benefit analysis. See that. So that's a separate issue. The difference, again, between the 1.9 and the 1.3 is including the V2, V3, historical, the ongoing operations and maintenance. Segmenting out, separating out. BSA's position is it's all CCMS related and all should be included.
Yes. Stephen, can I just ask a follow-up question on that point? That cost, which includes the operation and maintenance of, let's use the example specifically of Fresno using the V2 system, correct, is included then as part of the total cost of CCMS and the in that 1.9 million activity. And so I think there are different groups have made different assumptions, but just as an example, in that particular case, the Superior Court of Fresno County had what they described as a failure of their system, and they made written requests, came up and met to be able to use the V2 system so that they could manage their activities. Not something that we were promoting or seeking or whatever, and so they were granted access to the system, and now, under certain assumptions, their individuals are counting the cost of operating and maintaining that system in the court as part of the total cost of CCMS. But that court was in a position where they were going to need to go make some decision about the system. And so that's the issue that's always been there in terms of how OCIO looked at it, how we've looked at it, and then how BSA has looked at it. And so there's just been a judgment difference on some of those things about what you include and don't include in the actual cost of the development and deployment of the California case management system as it's developed.
Justice Hull, you had a question or comment?
I did. Thank you, Chief. Just one or two, if I may, for Mr. Finley or Mr. Nash. One small point. If I heard you correctly, Mr. Finley, the percentage of electronic case file delivery, you estimated at 73%. Is that 73% as of 2021 or as of today or somewhere in between?
It's an average by the time that all the courts are deployed, so that would be by 2018 in the 58 court deployment, the 73% or thereabouts.
All right, thank you. And I was wondering, on the charts that we have at page Roman numeral 4 of the executive summary, I noticed that when we compare fiscal year 02-03 to fiscal year 2021, the first column, say looking at the 58 court deployment, and then comparing essentially from today to 2021, that return on investment goes up rather dramatically, from about $566 million to $836 million. Mm-hmm. Am I reading that correctly?
Yes.
Could you just briefly, and then I'll have a question after you do it. I'm not learned enough in this by a long shot to know why is it that number goes up that dramatically if we look from for return of investment from today to 10 years from today?
So it's actually, I think, a pretty simple answer. It's that in the 2002 to 2020 scenario where we've got $566 million, what you have to, or we have to sort of take into consideration there is we've spent $270 million so far, and that comes right off the return on investment. When you're looking just from today onwards, you're basically starting out from a clean slate. So we forget about we spend any money, we're starting from scratch, so you don't have to worry about that 270.
Well, so then is it as we consider return on investment, maybe it doesn't make any difference, but is it more appropriate for decisions that we're making today to focus on the 2011-12 fiscal year to 2020-21 as a return? And I understand your explanation a moment ago. It really is not comparing the same things. But would we focus on the higher number or on the lower number?
Well, I think it's not so much the higher or the lower. It's the, I think the point you make about should we be focusing on the number from today onwards or taking a straw. And that's from a, you know, if you were talking to an economist, they would tell you what you spent is spent and it doesn't matter effectively. You know, you're not getting that money back. So really it's, what do we spend from today on? What are our choices today? You know, and given the choices we have today, what is the economic return for those choices? So from that perspective, yes, the 2011 through 2020 is the, you know, the only number that really matters in a sense. But we know people are interested in the total life cycle cost, so we wanted to make sure we presented those.
I see. That's very helpful.
Thank you.
Can I?
Mr. Carlson.
Alan Carlson with Orange County, and thank you. I've heard this twice now, and I think I'm getting close to understanding what you're doing. I have three questions. You talked about the startup process in each court, that it would take about a year from when they, so to speak, brought it in to when it would really work well. So what I hear you saying is, and I wasn't in Orange when we did it, but I hear it from all my staff, the first few months are miserable, and then it gets better, and eventually you forget about what it is. So we should really anticipate that in every court where we deploy V4, assuming, or CCMS when we go forward.
That's, I have never seen a large IT project deploy anywhere where people didn't have to go through that process. It's okay. Just a fact of life.
Yeah.
You can make it quicker and less painful, but it's never going to go away.
Yeah. I also have heard from a lot of courts that, and you mentioned this, I want to make sure I understand whether this was in there. What the systems they have now don't have as much data as as CCMS does. So it takes more staff, and putting aside the electronic filing piece, it takes more staff initially to use CCMS than it might have taken to run your old system. You included that in your cost study.
Yes.
So that's in there.
That's in there.
You're acknowledging some people are going to need some more staff, maybe at least initially, until we can get to electronic filing.
Yes.
Kind of status. Okay. Last question. So your first set of scenarios does not include the V2, V3 costs or the maintenance costs, but then you did another set of scenarios where you did include some of those costs. Would it be fair to say that the generally accepted business practice, so to speak, on running this kind of cost-benefit analysis would not include V2, V3 and maintenance? You're talking about what it costs to develop CCMS and go forward.
It really depends on how you view V2 and V3, you know. And the reason we did not in our sort of, you know, the first set of numbers that we presented is we think it's reasonable to consider V2 and V3 as separate independent systems. And the reason we think that's reasonable is if you cancel the project today, V2 and V3 don't go away. They still are systems that are out there. People are going to be using them for a lot of years. You know, who knows what happens. So in that sense, the cost to develop V2 and V3, well, they were developed separate systems. You know, now you could make an independent question about, you know, what should there be a cost-benefit analysis for V2 and V3, but that's a different question. But from the point of view of the V4 perspective, you know, V2 and V3 are separate systems. So we didn't think it was necessarily, you know, the most logically consistent, you know, approach to include them. But we wanted to make sure that we did, at least at the end, so people could see the numbers when you did include them.
Stephen?
Yeah, just one quick point, and I want to make sure everyone is clear on this. I think it was referenced, but I want to make sure it's clear because I don't want it. It'll probably come out later, and it'll be, oh, gee, oh gosh. On page 42 of the report, you'll see revenues. There's actually a new revenue assumption here, and for some of these revenues, these are already in place in some courts and they're being collected. We have an assumption, and this is consistent with what's occurred in some other states with major case management efforts, but we're saying, and there's three, and ultimately this would be a proposal, but three revenue sources that would support ongoing operations and maintenance. Very conservative assumptions. This would leave revenue in place, and under this assumption where courts already have something going on and they're already collecting it, so it wouldn't create holes. Very conservative, we're saying this would create these additional revenue items would create $30 million per year. So I just want to go on record, make it clear that there is embedded in here this revenue proposal. If you take that revenue proposal out, you're still positive ROI, return on investment, substantially positive ROI. This is just a component, but I wanted to make sure everyone was clear it was there.
Thank you. Judge Yu?
Well, actually, my question sort of goes to the issue of new revenue. I understand that we have some proprietary rights to the code, and I'm wondering if, in looking at the optimistic version of the ROI, anyone's looked into possibilities of new revenue being generated if other courts wish to adopt CCMS in their jurisdictions?
The answer is no. We did not consider that possibility at all.
Is there any historical information that we could look to? And perhaps this is speculative and too early, but I would think that this is something that would be useful for other courts because I've seen the system work and I know that this would be something that would be useful.
I'm not aware of any historical information in the court case management arena. There may be some, but I'm not aware of it. This kind of practice has been going on in the state human services arena for a while, but it generally hasn't been used to generate revenue. Not that it couldn't, but I'm not aware of a sort of a, you know, revenue sharing model that comes to mind. And certainly it's not a possibility we included. So, you know, if there was anything like that, that would be in addition to anything that we've considered.
Thank you. Ms. Krinsky?
I guess in some ways this is consistent with Judge Yu's question, although looking into a different area. You referenced the approximately $30 million a year of Child Welfare Services Agency.
I'm sorry. Could you hear my microphone? Yeah. Thank you.
Sorry. Is it on?
Yes. Keep it closer.
Okay. You referenced the around $30 million per year in Child Welfare Service Agency savings, and I presume that that doesn't include within it potential savings that might result by virtue of the fact that the child welfare system is going to have to be creating its own new electronic sort of management system. And by virtue of what we've created, I know that there have been some early discussions. I don't know if there's been any attempt to talk this through or to quantify it, that the investment that they'll need to be making as they move forward could well be reduced by virtue of what we've already created. So has that been accounted for, and is that the $29 million a year, or is that over and above the $29 a year? And I know Kurt is very familiar with these issues. I've had discussions with Director Wagner about it very briefly, so I don't know, you know, perhaps if you all aren't entirely sure what I'm referring to, I know that Kurt probably is.
I can sort of maybe we try and be precise about what is included and may help you sort of decide whether or not we've included what you're talking about. So in the, you know, the Child Welfare Services is in the process of developing a new CWS system.
Right.
As part of that, they, you know, in the human services world, you have to do these things called IAPDs, which are documents that go to the federal government to get your federal share, you know, of the costs. In their IAPD, that's where they've actually estimated these savings, which are all staff savings. So these are saying, you know, they are making the investment to build CWS. They're saying that if when they build CWS, if CCMS is in place, they will expect to get about $29 million a year in staff savings.
And that's what I understood. So I guess what it doesn't include, and I don't know if there's been any attempt to quantify this, is in building CWS, what they build and how they build it may well be cheaper or streamlined by virtue of what's already been created with CCMS, as I understand it. And again, and I'm seeing Diane Nunn nodding as well, I don't know if there's been an effort to quantify that, but it's my understanding that as they bring in federal revenue to help support the building of CMS, that there may be some ability, whether it's viewed as a cost savings or whether it's viewed as another revenue-generating mechanism, to tap into some of the revenue they build in and potentially incorporate that into the cost of what we're building by virtue of intersections in kind of the creation. So I don't know if anybody's attempted to try to look at that, but as I understand it from your answer, that's not included.
It's not included
in these.
No, I don't.
Okay.
Judge Herman.
Mr. Nash, just one final question on the numbers. And considering that actual expenses is a number that varies virtually daily, if you could help us with an estimate of the amount that's been spent to date on development and deployment of V2, V3, plus the development of V4, and in addition to that, there's been additional funding that's been spent to maintain V2, V3. And because I think there's a lot of focus on the 1.3, 1.9 billion, but it's helpful to know where we, dashboard wise, where we are right now.
Well, Stephen, while you figure that out, I have a question for Mr. Finley,
mm-hmm.
And it's a broader question. Of course, it's already been mentioned that Grant Thornton was recommended to us and your work by the CIO, knowing that you've done many state and out-of-state cost-benefit analyses of big systems. And I'm just curious, from a broad sense of point of view, if you found anything in doing this cost-benefit analysis of CCMS, V2, V3, V4, if you found anything different, remarkable, or surprising as we compare to other similar statewide case management systems?
One difference would be the fact that it's being done several years into the development of the system. You know, normally this is something that's done before, you know, the project starts. We have actually done some similar to this, actually, for other states where they've been in the middle of development and needed to go back and see, so, you know, does this thing really pay for itself?
Mm-hmm.
And so we've, you know, that's not unheard of. Mm-hmm. But normally this is something that, you know, you'll see sort of early on. I think the environment is probably more complex than normal, both because of California's size as well as the dynamics of the 58 courts plus, you know, state level expenses and so on. Other than that, though, the sort of the model here, this is pretty sort of standard, both for, you know, the large IT investments that California would try to do, as well as any of the other, you know, many of the larger states. The kind of thing we went through is exactly the same thing that we'd normally do, and I think the kind of things we found were, you know, pretty similar, I would say.
And does that include your assumptions as well as the return on investment as in terms of the numbers that we're speaking about?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mr. Nash, I think just given the time that we're dealing with, perhaps it's something that we could address through our governance. We could discuss the figures.
I've got the answer for you, Judge Herman.
On the other hand, like I said, we'd like to hear the answer.
So. Yeah, so when you include the V2 and V3 as well, up to now, the And this is through the end of 2009 through 2010. That's $156.7 million. We have, and again, through the end of 2009-2010, for CCMS development, deployment, we have, and including, yeah, CCMS development and deployment, $297.3 million through the end of last year. And so, again, in the broader what's all been spent for CCMS, you would bring those two together. And I could add that for you if you want. I don't have it. I got a calculator here last year.
I was a liberal arts major. So
I understand.
That's through the end of the last fiscal year?
That's through the end of 2009-2010. That's correct.
I just wanted to
use your mic, Bill.
Wrap up here, if I can, for a second. Stephen, I do have
use your mic.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mark, use your mic, Bill.
Use Dick's mic, but Mr. Penrod has a question. No. Two.
On page 24 of your report, you're discussing the canceling the CCMS scenario, and there's a statement that says the total continuing existing costs would be $5.3 billion. Reflecting the continued maintenance of current systems and the continued execution of status quo business processes. I didn't really understand how that number fit in with the other numbers you've given us.
Jim, is that 23?
23,
sorry.
Yeah. So during the, you know, the PowerPoint presentation today, you saw a series of tables. And each of those tables, you know, we had a row for cancel CCMS deployment and a dollar figure. Sometimes it was zero. Sometimes it was, you know, many millions of dollars. If you add all of those individual numbers up, you know, that you saw there, the total you would come to is this 5 point, actually it would be the 5.93. The total like, continuing existing cost, the 5.324, is a portion, some number of those slides you saw, you know, certain categories are included in those costs, and you add those together, you come, so the continuing existing program cost, which is about $4 billion and change, and then several of the other ones that we went through, you add those all together, it comes to that $5.3 billion. There is a, I won't try and take you through it, but there's a similar number for every one of the scenarios. That basically says if you do that same calculation for all the different scenarios, you come to a similar number, and it's in the billions. And the way you identify the return on investment is by comparing the numbers against each other and seeing what the difference is. So the ROI numbers that I presented here was effectively the number that you're looking at subtracted from one of the other scenarios, and what we're looking at is the difference between them, if that helps.
And I think you said in the qualitative area, the savings to lawyers and clients from this system, you have not put a number on.
That's correct.
Now we have like 160,000 practicing lawyers. If they saved $2,000 a year each on this system, that would add $320 million on the positive benefits side of the system?
It could, but the other side of that equation, which we also did not consider, are the costs required of those justice partners to integrate with CCMS. So we tried to be fair that, you know, we wouldn't consider a benefit until we all, unless we also considered a cost. Because we weren't able to estimate the costs on that side, we wouldn't include the benefits either. But you're correct. I mean, there is potential benefits there. Stephen's just reminding me, there's probably one thing I should mention. It's in one of the appendices. One thing that we did at AOC's request is, you know, as I said, we did not try and make a statewide estimate of justice partner costs or benefits, a local justice partner. We did analyze state level, but not local level, simply because of the complexity associated with it. It's a very difficult thing to do. But what we did do was a more high-level investigation of the likely costs to justice partners of integrating with CCMS. And so to do that, we talked to several of the early adopter courts and some justice partner representatives of those counties And they're pretty early in the process, and they're not really able to give a very good estimate of what it's likely to cost, but they gave us some numbers which allowed us to make some sort of county-by-county estimates, and it's going to be very variable on a county-by-county basis, depending on how big they are, how much integration they have already. But it is something we tried to look at just so people get a flavor of what's likely to be involved on the cost side. But again, we didn't tackle the benefit side.
Any more questions? Bill, did you want to discuss where this report goes from here?
Yes, just for a moment here. This is another, and I think a very rich set of information that will be important to you as a council as you guide and make the decisions about what you authorize to proceed, priorities, budget that you allocate, and a whole variety of other things. And our, at least my recommendation at this point is that we have a new governing committee that has a charge that was authorized through your executive and planning committee to provide thorough both oversight and for the project and responsibility to make recommendations to you for action on all of those issues. And so the types of information that we have available that Justice Bernier's executive governing committee and then the three advisory committees that are working with them that they will hopefully return to and examine in developing recommendations to you include information such as, and I don't mean this is an exclusive list, but information from the former Chief Information Officer Clark Kelso, who is sitting at the back there, who was involved in the discussions and decisions in the early part of the process. You heard the Gartner report that was referred to that provided a business case analysis, but not a cost-benefit analysis of the process. We have the CIO's more recent report, the audit, all of which are extraordinarily helpful, and then the cost-benefit analysis. And so all of those things, Justice Bernier's committee and the advisory committees under that will be going through the analysis and review process with a goal of how do we use this information to guide decision-making in a way that will limit and minimize the risk to the greatest extent possible and hopefully have us be creative and aggressive about how we maximize the benefits and try to move more towards the optimistic scenario if we can. I mean, that's our challenge as a process, and then your challenge as the decision-makers and the owner of CCMS and how we do those things. You also will be receiving more information as we proceed, and I think, Mark, by April there should be information that will come back on the trial court's acceptance testing process that they're involved in now, and so that you get some information about what the results of that process is. By summer, you'll have both follow-up information on the testing on e-filing and the data warehouse and also the independent review of the core product that will be coming back and guiding the decisions in that process. This is going to is a long project as we move ahead, and the council will need to know how to dedicate the time of individuals to have the knowledge and the experience to, as you go through this process, to be able to form your own judgment based on the best information that you have available to you. And that'll have to be done in a way that hopefully allows us to bridge the turnover in the council in that process, knowing that we're hoping that the governing committee and its three advisory committees, that membership will remain relatively stable during this thing, but for people retiring from their jobs and those kinds of things in the process. And I think the chief has some plans to try to institutionalize a process in the council so that we can have the strength of people being involved in activities. And we have a number of council members that by design and recommendation are sitting on different portions of the governing committee process so that we've have that knowledge base in the council, but there's still going to need to be the ability within the council to do its own analysis and then to package the information for the full council to deal with as we move ahead.
I want to thank Mr. Finley for an excellent report. Thank you very much, and Stephen as well. I know that we're going to take a lunch break, but thereafter we're going to hear from Justice Berniers and others, as you see on the agenda. And if you have any questions about where CCMS goes from here, Justice Berniers and the chairs who are here will be happy to address that with you after our lunch break. We'll take a break until 11:55. Pines.
Well, I don't know if this is the appropriate time for a motion to do just what Mr. Vickery said, or we're going to do that later. But I
want to do that later, okay, when Justice Berniers has a chance to, after lunch, address any other questions, because he's chair of the executive committee, and I want him to tell us any more he wishes to hear about this, because or his vision of where we go with this.